Welcome to the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show, presented by Hugh Hattrick. Drive fast and try not to crash.
Good evening. We're live on the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show. Welcome. Now, it's a miracle tonight because we have all the hosts and pretty much all the guests that we've had on in throughout the whole year hosting the show are here in one place.
And a Christmas special.
It's a Christmas special. Exactly.
Do it, Andrew.
Would you like to introduce yourselves round by round? First of all, Andrew.
Yes, it's me again, Andrew Dixon.
Andrew Marr.
Hello.
Jonathan Sullivan.
Yeah, that's my introduction. Good to be here.
So, yeah, welcome to the show. It's fantastic to have you joining with us. And for all our viewers and listeners, we did try and do it on Podbean, but unfortunately we couldn't quite get it all to work. Maybe they'll make it eventually. We can sort that all in the future. So we thought we would celebrate what's been a magnificent year of motor racing. And we've had some fantastic car and kind of racing experiences. And we thought we would talk about the highlights of our year. If you remember, you can comment on the show, whether you're watching us on StreamYard or on YouTube. We're live on It's the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show. You'll find it under Hugh Hattrick on YouTube. And it would be great to see some of your comments. So who would like to go first with one of the highlights of the year?
Total silence. Everyone's far too polite.
Okay. Well, I always talk too much anyway. Somebody else go first.
But don't worry, when this is the program and before they were famous, they'll have a good chuckle at this one.
But
one of my highlights, I mean, I've had quite a few really, really good highlights this year, but it was going to the Blancpain Championship down at Silverstone, where I got to meet David Perrell, which is the guy you can just see there in the green overalls there. And he recognised me because I'd interviewed him in March earlier on this year. And he's won like the Spa Blancpain Championship or the GT Series there about three times. And a really, really good guy from South Africa. He was slightly older when he kind of has become more successful in motor racing. But for a long time, you know, he didn't get paid and he had to kind of pay for it all himself. And he was basically bust. And he thought, right, that's it. My motor racing career is over. But as the South Africans do, he went with his brother and started an IT company. And it was so successful within a few years that he was able to raise the money to go back to Ferrari and these amazing companies and car manufacturers. And they got a drive. And from then on, he's been one of the most competitive out there in the field for the Blancpain and things like that. He races all over the world. And he was at Silverstone. And I'd won a competition with Renault. It just shows you, if you sign up for everything, to sign up for every, especially the business side of manufacturers' offerings. And there was always competitions. And they gave me a full buffet lunch and a tour of the circuit. And I got to drive a Renault Megane RS, not around Silverstone, but around the roads at Silverstone. And then we got the grid walk as well, as they set up the grid for the race, which I have to say was really, really good. Because it's all, you know, the cars are everywhere, the mechanics are all over the place. And I know there was a lot of people on the grid. It's really felt quite special, you know, because you saw them arriving and they have big Bentleys and Audi R8s and all sorts of stuff. It was really good fun. I would say that was definitely one of my highlights of the year. How about you, Andrew? Andrew Mark.
I think it's got to be the Silverstone Grand Prix itself. I mean, I've not been anywhere or met anybody particularly interesting. Look at myself in the mirror now and again and go, but the actual race I thought was fantastic. And I've said this before loads of times and I bore everybody with it. Everyone goes on about how great Hockenheim was. It was very entertaining in the sense of Keystone Kops and Demolition Derby. But as a race, it wasn't a race. It was just people crashing all the time, which is great. It's fun. But yeah. Silverstone, the skill of a number of the drivers and the skill of the team of Mercedes in getting the strategy right, I just thought it was fantastic. It was so exciting because when they were chasing, when Lewis was chasing people and getting past and Ricardo was getting past and people were just battling. What a that's what racing's all about. That is really what F1 is meant to be, and it was brilliant.
And you were there, were you, at the race?
No, I watched on telly.
All right.
I wish.
Yeah. Went in the paddock club with Hugh then, meeting all the celebrities.
Maybe next year, I promise you.
Future dream.
We need to go get, we all need to get that to Goodwood or something next year. Oh. And it's only £42 each if you go on the Thursday for the Festival of Speed, but they no longer do the drive up the hill anymore. That's been, you know, when you used to be able to do the moving motor show, that's all changed now. So it used to be able to drive, they had certain manufacturers would have enough cars ready for you to have a go. And they would accompany you, and then you would drive up the hill. And I had a go a few years ago in an Infiniti. It was one of these, it was the hybrids, and it was quite a good car. So we went in, and we came across along to the start, and I was trying to ask the guy, because he was giving me all the palaver about the car and how good it was and all the rest of it. I'm saying, look, can you show me where the blooming start-stop is so I can turn it off? Because it kept stalling, you know, and I thought, you want to do a good start away, and it was just going, you know, and kind of stalling. And so eventually he showed me how to do it. So I did this huge wheel spin start with an 80-year-old Uncle Gus in the back as well. we kind of got away along like a kind of Mercedes AMG, except with none of the skill or any of the
impressions. And do you set times, Hugh, when you do that, or is it non-timed?
You get an extra chicane to try and slow you down so that
on the main straight.
Yeah. But it's quite funny because as soon as we headed off round the main first couple of corners, he says, "You're obviously trying to take this seriously, aren't you?" And I'm like, "Yes," because you know, like a lot of them are toddling around, you know. And then that's the thing. But we had a fantastic time actually, and it was really good fun. And it's there's something about, you know, you're going under the bridges, and that's what all the crowds are watching the next day. You know, I mean, it was quiet when we were there because everyone was away just because it was a moving motor show. But for a year or two, they did it when people were actually watching. Because they did it for an hour or two, and then they had sessions for other stuff. So you get like somebody in a Datsy, a Logan, like what I used to drive, and behind them was a Ferrari 488 twin turbo, you know, kind of getting
around. Yeah, just slightly frustrated.
You know, you see them when they're dying and that's flying up the road, you know, in a stepway or something. But it'd be like the fastest motability car in the country, you know.
You see, with a situation like that, you don't want fast cars. When you want people have people going up, you want to put them in a 1 litre Fiat Uno or something like that. Because they're never going to get outside of their own skill level then. But they can still... I mean, some of the biggest laughs I ever had were with a little 1 litre Fiat Uno or we had a 30-litre as well. Because you're just having mad fun. But you never put yourself in. Same with motorbikes. I had a big 750 and this kind of stuff, some Hondas. But my first bike was a 250 Charles bike, and I used to go over Penna Pass past Snowdon and all this kind of stuff, and it was the most fun because I couldn't go fast. You were just throwing this bike around and having a laugh. So I reckon with something like that, they should put people in something small and fizzy and. I mean, they do this little the Cinquecento with a 6-speed gearbox, you know. So racing gearbox, and they were designed specifically for mad Italian youth to not kill themselves in whilst they're having all and they've all got dents in because they all live, you know, they're in Rome and they're smashing into each other because they're Italian, you know, or trying to be like Takuma Sato and hit people, or Roman Grosjean. That's what they should do with something like that. I mean, that would make that hill superb because you floor it and you're at full pelt with the engine, but you never do more than 60 or 70 miles an hour, are you? So you're not going to kill yourself, hopefully.
Well, I remember taking my mum and dad in a Fiat Uno years ago now when we were at Longridge Tower School, and it was only taking about 15, 20 minutes to get there, but I managed, it was before they put all the speed limits through a lot of the little villages and towns.
Oh, yeah.
So you could tear on through. And I never needed to slow down for any corner from here to Berwick just a bit. Because you just could keep it going. It was so light. And if you got the line right, you could just keep the car going the whole way.
That's I was reading an article years ago by Quentin Wilson, if you remember, from the old Top Gear.
And
it was an article. He was sat in the car park waiting for his missus to come out from shop. And he saw this idiot in an Astra with big wide wheels and low suspension and a big drainpipe exhaust trying to do handbrake turns in the dry. Obviously not understanding that having 10-foot wide wheels stops that happening, you know. And he just mused about how, when we were all growing up as oldies, we drove knackered little things with skinny wheels that had no power, okay? So we learned how to drive. We learned how to... The only way you could make progress in a little thing like that, you couldn't rely on the power of the engine, so you had to learn how to keep your speed up in the corners. And then when you got into cars with a bit more power, you knew what you were doing. Now, even relatively small cars are actually quite quick. And they get in them, or they get a diesel with all this torque, and it's effortless, and they don't know how to corner. Kids don't know, because they don't have to. So I think it's brilliant that we're in these little pop Fiestas or Metros, you know, if you can get one that works, stuff like this.
Overtaking maneuvers had to start about two or three turns before you came to the straight. You had to back off maybe, I don't know, 300 or 400 meters behind, get your speed up, get the line, and you had to time it perfect. So you had to keep that foot on the throttle. You just nipped out.
Exactly.
The work that went, and if there was something coming the other way, you lost that opportunity, and all that work had been lost. But it was, keeping momentum, learning your lines, knowing the limits. That's where the skill was.
Feel what was going on with the grip. You knew when they were getting a bit of slip and what you had to do about it and the understeer. And
exactly. Now they just get a little light on the dashboard that says you're going a bit too fast. The stability controls cut in. Whereas we were understeering towards a hedge. That was our warning.
Say cadence braking to someone these days and they'll go, what's that?
That's it.
Now it slows them down because the thing is, they'll have a little thing on their dashboard saying that their insurance company is going to cancel the insurance.
Exactly. If any of us went driving with one of those black boxes, the insurance policy would be cancelled by the time we got home. It's like, what the hell are you doing? You were putting 2G in an Astra. You know, it's like,
You're accelerated.
I wonder how many times in those kind of cars now, if you set it all up, they'd probably do the SOS button automatically, thinking you were about to have a crash. So they
preemptive.
You'd have an ambulance turning up at about three different locations on a 10-mile trip. You know,
My first Saab 9000, somebody just tapped me up the rear because they weren't paying attention. You know, coming up to a roundabout, very low speed, and being a Saab, it didn't damage it at all. But I couldn't start it. It switched off, and I couldn't start it again. And it took a while. It took the AA man to come and tell me there's a little switch, and the little switch is when you get bumped, it pops up, switches the engine off so that your engine switches off in an accident. And I'm like, and all you literally just open the bump, you pry this little thing up, press it back down again, everything works. I mean, yeah, okay, we get the safety side of it, but it's thinking for you. When surely it'd be better to train people to think instead of stop thinking and you can never do anything ever again. I sat there for 2 hours waiting for the AA to come and say, oh, it's this button here, you know. But people, if you take away the need to think, people will stop thinking, and that's why they're also dangerous now. Clearly.
That's why no one needs travel lights, because they don't
know. I was going to say, that's why roundabouts have been taken away, because people don't think ahead or plan. It required you to sort of make eye contact with the other driver, make a relationship. Well, now it's just, if it's green, I go, and if somebody is in the way, people get angry, you know, they're on the horn. Whereas if you have pedestrian crossings and just sort of ordinary give way signs, then people have to just get along. If you let more control, then the angrier people get, I find.
The best bit was, I remember years ago at Knockhill, it took me 3 attempts at Knockhill to have a go in this single seater thing. Way back in March 1994, the first 2 times it was snowed off. And then the third time I finally was able to go out there, my father was with me. And I said, it looks like it's going to work. And I was so excited. I thought, this is my chance. But I was way too kind of over, just cooking everything, basically. I didn't pay the slightest bit of attention when they took you around in the Mark IIs Ford, I think it was a Fiesta, around the circuit to show you your lines. And so you had to drive. And that was all. It seemed okay. I'd done a little bit before. Or you know, I was kind of slightly familiar with that side. And then eventually you got into this Formula Ford or whatever it was. And because we had to wait so long, and they weren't very impressed with me. I knew they were because I'd brought my own helmet, my own balaclava and all the rest of it and stuff. And I had nothing else except the helmet and the balaclava. And then when I got into the car, I thought, right, let's have some fun here. But it had a really low rev limit. It was like 4,500 RPM.
Why did they do that?
Just when the car was beginning to really, you know, I was shocking. So and it was quite difficult. It was quite a chunky gearbox. It wasn't. It didn't really have a nice feel to it at all. So I went to the end of the pit lane, and then the red light was on, and you had to wait to the bean. So I just kept it on the absolute on this limiter. It was going for about a minute. And then when the light went to green, I was like, and I shot off and managed to get a bit of wheel spin, only because I had a wheel on the grass. So
on the grass floor.
To get some traction, we actually get some spin, you know, to kind of get going a bit. And I was just barely trying to show off because I thought I'm going to at least make some noise, if nothing else, you know. And well, I managed to get one lap round without spinning. But on my second lap, I caught up with some with two other people. And I was trying to overtake them, and they said you're only allowed to overtake on the straight. I think on the left, it had some funny way of doing it. And we came into Duffus Dip, and the thing was, I was so fed up, I was like, I'm not going to wait here, because they were kind of blocking the left, so you couldn't go through. So I kind of came through on the right, and then I realised it was going to be a bit too late, so I kind of backed out of the move. But the people in front obviously thought I was going to try and come through. One wasn't looking and went straight off into the barriers. And then I came down and I spun, and the other person spun trying to avoid me because I'd kind of gone past one left there. And I ended up going on the grass and had mud everywhere, but I was fine. The car stalled, but you could start this one. It had an onboard starter, so you could start it.
Right.
And so they had to. I managed to get going again. The other two, he was the first one who hit the barrier, he was out. And then the other guy, he was kind of stuck in the mud. And so he wasn't going anywhere. And
did anyone see it? Or because you're in Duffus Dip, did no one see it?
No.
Did you get away with it?
They had marshals. They did have marshals. So they had to red flag the whole session. Oh. So I tunneled back onto the road with a car covered in mud. And I went into the pits. And I was like, go on. You know, I was pointing at the wheels. I was expecting them to clean the car for me. And I was like, come on, clean the car, so I could get back out again. And he, like, the guy brought this old mop and kind of like this kind of cleaned it a little bit, less, and kind of got the mud out of the side pods and everything else. And then off I went, and it was something else. And I just did that. It was the only time when I did a proper, you know, when you see them in the old days coming out of the pits and they actually do a slide as they come out of the pits. I actually managed to do that in this car. And the thing is, it was so dangerous because there were people everywhere. You know, all the great drivers with their wives were all standing along the pit lane. And I just came straight out in this broadside and sort of falling off I went, you know. That was it.
He's just got a new nickname for you, Hugh. Hugh Jimmy McRae. Hat trick. You know, it's a Mac attack.
It was brilliant because at the end, you get your little certificate, and there's the top three. Well, I came out of about 20 people. I came like 20th. They did not even want to give me a certificate because I'd caused so much. So we had to wait in the pits for a wee while, and then I saw the truck eventually come back with the other car on it, and all the rest of it, and another one being pulled away. And
you mad man.
So that was the thing. But so that was my Knockhill experience. But it was well worth it, though. It was good fun.
So that's the Knockhill Rally experience you did there, was it? Hugh? Was it the race drive experience? I wanted the rally experience. I just thought I'd go off-road.
Do both. Why not?
Yeah, exactly. Do them both in one go.
The only one of those I've been on, when I had a wife, the darling ex of mine, she bought me what she thought was a day rally experience. And it turned out to be you sat in a 300 horsepower Subaru Impreza with a roll cage. You went up and down and up and down at the Yorkshire Air Museum. That was it. It was a whole day of driving for nothing. It was useless. And the guy, you get three laps up and down and with these cones, and you're on tarmac.
You might as well just take your car in the Sainsbury's car park at 7 in the evening.
Okay, you know. And this guy sat next to me, and I'm trying to get used to the car because I want to try and I wanted to learn. And down this, you know, I've sort of planted it to go down the straight, and then you're just going around it. It's like a tiny little traffic cone version of Daytona, but not as much fun. Yeah. And he goes, get on with it. I just had a half hour lecture on if you even look like you're going too fast, we'll kick you out of the car. And then come on, and I'm like, well,
yeah,
F you then, pal. And I'm just planting it, and I'm just mad. But then, I mean, there was a Westfield, remember the Westfield SEI little
lock seven
type of thing? Great little car. Well, this nutter, as part of the package, you got to sit in with this nutter as he went round and did some real driving. And he looked at me and said, "Do you get scared?" I went, "Get on with it." So shoved my hands under my thighs to stop them flapping about. And this guy went as fast as he could. We were doing 90 mile an hour slides to enter this little cross piece between two parts of the runway. He was having as much fun as me because usually they're all there going, "Ah!" And I'm there going, "Yes, get on with it. Finally, some speed." Oh, that was a really good bit. That and going around Yorkshire Air Music, I touched my first English Electric Lightning and nearly died of excitement.
Wow. That's an engine with wings. Well, barely got wings, in fact.
Frightening. I used to watch them as a child. When I used to go on holiday near Mablethorpe as a child, all the way through my, till I was 16, every year, because they were still flying then. And I think the last, was it Lincolnshire, was the last squadron. And you just knew when they were coming over.
They can only fly for about 20 minutes or something, couldn't they, before they ran out of fuel?
Electric frightening, I think they used to call it.
Yeah, I mean, the approach speed must have been about 200 knots or something. I had to stop the damn thing.
No, actually, because they were actually very stable and very, 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 very easy to fly in that sense.
Were they?
Yeah, much, much better. Because the Americans had the F-100, the Starfighter, the one that kept crashing. Yeah.
Oh, yes, that wasn't very stable. That was about as stable as a Big Brother celebrity.
Yeah, the Stormtrooper.
Like Flack.
That's the.
Oh, no, Hattrick's done it.
Yeah. Shut up, man.
It's the Car Sim and Racing Aeroplane Show.
I'm going to say, John, you're probably good at telling this one. Remember, it was my experience when I nearly flipped over and crash landed on a Porsche 911 early in the year.
Oh, goodness. Although I did have an idea when Andrew was telling that story about his lame race day when he wouldn't let him go over 30 miles an hour to clap that Impreza. It'd be a really good thing to have people ring in or just do worst race car driving experience day ever with the lamest possible instructions that were just too scared to let you do anything at all.
That's a good idea. Actually.
A good one. I did my ex-girlfriend got me a race day up at Knock Hill. Not race day, it was a rally day. And the Impreza was absolutely shagged. I mean, honestly, it had been around this rally track so many times. The gearbox, I think, had two of the five ratios left. The turbos were shagged, blue smoke pouring out the back. The steering, you had about a quarter of a turn before it did anything. And it didn't have any suspension at all. And they were so proud of this thing. And the chief examiner, who's this woman, took us around, and she could barely drive it either. And then I got in, and all she did was said, "Slow down, slow down, slow down," for about 5 minutes. And that was it. That was your $149.99 down the drain.
Now, the only one of these I've heard of personally, my old manager where I used to work, he's an Essex boy. I could do an impression. Andrew, get the thing. Anyway, after I came back from this really rubbish day out, I told him about it, and he went, "Oh, you want to go to this place down in Essex?" And I could never remember where it was, because if I could, I would find some way. Oh, John's got that. And he went on a rally day there, and it was a day where the fellow was shouting at you, "We're going too slow."
And that's, exactly that's what you need.
You need some nutter in, I think it's a Mark II Escort, or Mark III Escort, telling you, "Come on, go faster, brake later, slide it." That's what you want, because it's fun, and B, you learn something. But I never remember what about 10 years.
Nothing worse than having overbearing instructors who just know it all and no one
gets sued, though, isn't it? Oh, you'll get sued, and then you'll.
The absolute worst was at the day that Hugh and I go to most summers, which is the summer Christmas, we call it. And all the manufacturers go there and you can drive their cars. Company Car in Action, it's called. Ooh. And Porsche were there this year with a lovely arrangement of cars. But everyone had to be in a company drive. So you couldn't just take it around the route by yourself. You had some absolute no-mark with you from Porsche trying to go slowly. And the limit on the track was 55 or something. And honestly, a 911, 55 miles an hour. What's the point? I think you and I both, you meant to do like a couple of laps of the high speed ball, And we just said, we just both just drove it back to the pits and said, absolutely waste of time. Just keep your car. And they would, the trouble is, if you were driving like a little, I don't know, a Renault Clio or something, you'd be held up by a Porsche Panamera Turbo. You know, you're just in second gear thinking, come on. And that's when Hugh flipped out. That was the story he was alluding to before. He was driving a Jeep Renegade diesel or something. We were all stuck behind this Porsche 911, along with a couple of other cars who I can't remember. And I was behind in another Jeep Renegade. And the name was perfect because Hugh just lost it. He completely lost it. And it's strictly no overtaking on this track. And all I saw was the back of the Renegade squat down, a little puff from the engine. I thought, uh-oh, I recognize this. Patrick's lost it. So he goes on the inside. It was quite a wide bit of the track. And he's powering past, probably about 75, 80 on this turn. But there's a kind of a ramp up to the off-roading center, which sort of comes into the track. And he obviously forgotten it was there. And all I saw was no brake lights. I just saw a kind of the car jink slightly right. And then literally just go airborne. And the ramp, it kind of went up like that, almost on two wheels. I could see this 911, and he kind of overtook it, partially airborne, and landed about a foot from its left-hand side. And then it kind of shimmied around a bit as he tried to get control. And there's marshalling points to make sure you're not driving too fast around this Alpine. And there's this guy, and honestly, he was so bored all day, and he was clearly smoking some of the old doobies. He's doing this kind of dance like they used to do in the 80s, like, you know, the, and his face was just like, and he kind of went, he ran to get the red flag, but he couldn't find it, and he was all flustered. And then by the time I came around, he was trying to wondering what had happened. And I was wondering what had happened and if he was going to get reported, but he was just off, absolutely off. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen.
If you could only get like footage of that, and we could do, is it TikTok or something like that? And just put,
but I'm amazed that the guy from Porsche didn't report you, because I mean, unless he was just so amazed that the Jeep overtook him airborne, you know, on the left-hand side.
That's a situation where a Scotsman bringing his claymore with him has benefits.
Yeah.
No, well, no, don't hit me with your big sword, Mr. Scotsman. I don't want to tear anything.
The thing is, don't let anyone tell you there's never a way past.
That's why you like Romain Grosjean. The man who always knows there's a way past.
It was when I landed, and I thought, I'm just going to keep my foot in, because I thought the worst thing I could do is back off, because then it might just spill out, and then I would really literally take out the whole lot of them.
But did something else not happen later in the lap on the Alpine Ridge? You're not getting another, because was there an accident or a car had broken down and there was a tiny gap?
There was a guy who kept stopping further around the track, because it's a really amazing track. And you go through the forest and it gets steeper and steeper. And then we came down the hill and somebody had stopped right over the yump.
Oh, and that Honda CHR thing.
Yeah, everything was all behind it. And I thought, I can't even hear, because I was over the tip of the hill. Nobody could see me coming. And I thought, I've just done that move on that Porsche. And I'd made quite a lot of space between me. But I thought, if he comes round, he might crash. And that could be the thing. So I just thought, everyone had come to a complete halt. And it said you were allowed to go past the cars if they were at a standstill. And nobody was moving. And I thought, well, I can't see anything dangerous there. So I thought, right, I'm just going to go past. So I actually managed to get past about 15 cars. As they all stopped. And then went straight on. And then I went back to the garage and very quickly get my keys back to Fiat.
Yeah, and deny that you'd had that car out at all. Exactly.
So they were about another 10 minutes before they got past, before they got back. And by the time it was all cleared up. So, but when I saw you coming back and you were just laughing your head off when you got out of the car, and I kind of crept up behind you so that you wouldn't see me.
I was convinced you were going to get the sort of marshal was going to come and take away your driving license for the day, because that was one of your wildest moves. That was just, I've seen it a couple of times with Hugh. There's once when we were a bit late for a flight going to Edinburgh Airport, heading out to Spain once, and he just got the red mist in Castorfin in Edinburgh. And when it happens, there's nothing you can do. He's on it. Yeah.
And I decided to go through town, and I was so fed up with the traffic, but I'll let you carry on.
Yeah, well, we were just behind this, was it a Saab or something? Was it going really slow? It was rocking you the whole time, and you just lost it. And then through along Kristoffen Road and on the A8 heading out towards the airport, it's a 40 zone. We were just weaving through traffic. It was like Gran Turismo, sort of 75, 80. Red lights, they were just changing color to hue. It was just boom, straight through. Then we got to the airport and he never said anything. With Hugh, it's all right. Yvonne was like, just slow down. It's okay. We're going to make the flight, but nothing. He wasn't listening. The hearing had gone. The red mist had come down. We came into the kind of car park and we're sliding on the gravel and he just found this space and went in. And then I jumped out and the courtesy bus was coming to get this flight. And he popped the boot open and we just threw the bags in front of the courtesy bus. So it had to hit the brakes and stop because it was going to drive past without us. And then eventually he sort of calmed down a bit and we had a bit of sense out of him. The other time was when he went down the cycle lane around the outside of all those cars parked at Forest Road in Edinburgh, around the cycle lane, around the outside again. You couldn't talk to him. It was just focused. The red mist had gone. And I don't know what happens. Explain to you what happens in your mind because you can't talk to him. He doesn't talk to you. There's nothing you can do. You can pull a handbrake. He won't just smack you away. What happens to you in the mind?
Well, it just you just get so fed up to the point you're just saying, I'm just going to go for this now. I'm going to make a space. And that was the thing. And there was so much traffic everywhere and queues everywhere. And I thought, I'm just going to go with this car where I can basically fit my car. I have the space.
I think there's still a seat going at Williams next year. Oh,
but I had taken mirrors off a Fiesta, an old Fiesta van, which is one of the narrowest vans out there at the time. And I remember coming around and that was it. I kind of regarded it as my Mansell moment. Because remember when Mansell overtook Berger, it was the last corner, the last lap in Mexico. And he goes round the outside of the Peratalba corner and he gets second place, literally in the last corner. That was my moment in the Fiesta van, of kind of going round everybody and then just
ignoring in a cycle lane. Through a red light, through the pedestrians.
I turned to green as they came through. So I had enough gas. I saw that the cars in front, didn't know where they would go by the time I was there. So I managed to push my way through and get in front of them all. And I kept going. And I think everyone was so amazed at where I'd come from. They just didn't know what happened. So
yeah, and you didn't even get hooted. I think people thought you were some kind of psychopath or something, or some kind of terrorist incident was occurring, driving down the pavements through a cycle zone. Best just keep out of it.
So it was.
I have two things. Like, first, I think that we should, in honour of Colin McRae, and we should say that you do have hack attacks, not mac attacks.
That's
hack attacks from Hattrick. And I just want to. I don't think he is, but is was Colin McRae? Was he from the Borders, by any chance? Or just
no. I think he was from the West, wasn't he?
No, Lanarkshire.
I think Lanarkshire.
I just want to. You know, it's the Pict.
Not far away.
So I just wonder because I've had, I mean, you know, the Mar name comes from vaguely Viking stock. And I've got Viking stock in my background. And I've had the odd red mist moment in my life too. I wonder whether it's just the Viking in us. You know, we just see something and because we haven't got a big longboat anymore or we just stick a foot down. Right, that's it.
Yeah, that's it. We're going to get rid of this blooming traffic.
We're going through this wall, whether you like it or not. I just wondered. You ever thought of being a white van man? I think that'd be a new career for you.
That wasn't a white van.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
I was going to say, Andrew, have you ever had, because you've driven for a long time as well. You must have had some.
I've written a works van off, yeah. Yeah. There was a 4x4 in my way at the time.
All right.
Yeah. At the end of it, there wasn't. Yeah, that wasn't good that day. But
well, you still got your job. That's all right.
I do, yes. I did get works points on my license, but.
All right. Uh-huh.
What's that? What's works points?
I think you get up to 9 for the year. But they go after the year. I think I had 3 for writing the van off.
Right. So if you smash them up, right?
So if you could have done another 2.
Do that year.
You could have written off 3, and then you still have to pay you. But you just would have to have done something else.
That was a red mist. That was the only time I've driven angry, and yeah, that was the result.
And you totaled it.
I totaled the van and the 4x4. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the risk you take with a red mist moment, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're all human.
I haven't driven Hungary before or after. So.
Were you carrying a piano at the time?
No.
So you only got 3 points for writing off the van?
Yeah.
And you're allowed 12 a year?
12, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you can write off 4 vans a year? That's brilliant.
But
is it one of those things where you've got the 1-800 how's my driving thing on the back? And if someone complains, you get a point.
Describe my accident. You know, but that's quite a thing. Well, when our local council, which I remain nameless, when they decided to get pro cars, they literally wrote off about 3 of them in the first few weeks. And I say it was all women drivers, but it was. Well, why did you give them the vote?
Oh God, is Hugh the bigot coming in again? Yeah, don't let the woman drive the cars.
I have to say, two of the best drivers I know in my life are women. One was my ex-girlfriend, it's Borders Lass from Gala Shields, and she didn't know. She was a really weird mix because she didn't know she was good. She had no idea. She didn't know what she was doing in terms of, if I do this, this happens. She just had that natural innate ability. She was just really good. And we used to do, I'm not a big gamer like you, but Sega Rally, Sega Rally 2, that kind of stuff we used to like. I used to beat her on that. But there was a sort of a Daytona and any other racing game in any arcade. She used to just wipe the floor with me. Even when I was beating her, somehow she'd appear from nowhere and just beat me. The other one is actually a rally driver. She's a North Wales, North West champion rally driver. And they're both women. And they're not, the stereotypes don't really work with them because they can pee all over most people. But I've got to say that Gala Lass, Emma, she had the odd moment as well.
Well, no, to anyone who's been listening, of course, that was a joke, my previous cigar motion. I'm sure there'll be the equality folk will be after us. But you can't regulate the internet. But
you can get deplatformed.
Red dot on you.
I haven't been platformed yet, let alone deplatformed. But I thought, it was a thing. Going back to these people who crashed, I think it was Fiat Pandas and a couple of electric cars. I mean, they literally just rolled them over walls and all sorts of stuff. But the best one was there was one lady who kept running out of electric power in her Nissan Leaf. And she says, well, I keep using all the aircon and everything else and all that kind of stuff. And I said, well, look, if your car said that you only had an eighth of a tank of fuel in it, the light came on, you would stop and get fuel, wouldn't you? You know, you would stop and charge, you'd get the alternative. And she went, oh, yeah. But it was just like they didn't think that they'd just keep going. And I said, well, if it gets low, you need to start turning things off because that might help you get back to your destination. But every time they abandoned ship, they had to get a special call out and this time it's pay for some truck to come and pick them up and recharge it and all the rest of it. But it cost them a bit of money, I think, when they were doing all of that. But people just didn't have any idea what to do with them. And yet it's only like you get in, turn the key, press a button, and then that's it. But I managed to have a major puncture when I was coming into Eyemouth because my wheel hit a curb, and it was one of those big ones where it just went bang, and the whole thing went. And the tyre was totally torn to shreds. And I was just coming into a car park in Eyemouth. Because I saw that the charger was free, so I thought I'd better get in there quite quickly before anyone else gets there. That was the thing. I just didn't realise I was taking the payment with me as I arrived in space. You know,
two chips and a nice chippy on the front.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the only thing was the first time it was a supercharger one, and it was like it was in Russian. The actual instructions, it wasn't in English. It was some kind of, because it gave you about 5 options of what power point you wanted, and then it said on the instruction thing in the car, this is the one you need. But it looked like it was written in Russian or something. So I managed to plug the thing in and eventually it worked. And then in the meantime, the recovery truck came and replaced my tyre. So that was quite good. But it was a whole... you're going to wonder what will be happening in 10 years' time once the cars are a bit more reliable, a bit better sorted. But that was my experience for that.
It's the range, isn't it? That's the thing on those things. I mean, it just seems like the worst possible car for a rural council to use. Because, yeah. I mean, they're not too bad in town at low speed, but for any kind of distance between jobs, if you're in the care business or whatever, you're just going to run out of charge. And then you're so far away. At least if you're in a city, you're always going to be, well, probably a mile or a kilometre away from a charging point. But if you're in the rural Berwickshire, not that that's the council, obviously, then you'd be, you can be sort of 20 miles away.
Well, I remember initially they got these cars, you know, the Vauxhall Amperes, and they had them on like a 5-year lease contract, but they spent about 30 grand a piece on them. And I remember the guy who bought them saying, I don't think they got a penny discount on the whole thing. And that was the council just wanting to be appear green so it could say that we've got all these cars. And so the likes of social work would use them and people who had appointments would go and use them. But they were really unreliable and they would break down quite often. But they were kind of at the early phase of the kind of hybrid electric things. But they were really expensive. And now, of course, they'll pay cash and pay full price for a Nissan Leaf, you know. So it's a lot of money for, you know, you think they would go in and try and negotiate quite a good deal for a bit of buying power, but they don't even try, though, I think, you know. And then that's the thing. And then they have these Toyota Yaris hybrids. They have these big signs on them telling us, are you cutting your carbon dioxide, you know, emissions and all the rest of it? We are. It's a heap of rubbish, you know, at 30 miles an hour along the A68. But, you know,
and then getting the big recovery trucks to come and get them.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
the whole concept that an electric vehicle has no emissions because it's bollocks. It moves emissions. That's what it does. It doesn't have no emissions. You still need power, and that power's got to be produced somewhere. And I've had people say, "Oh, there's wind farms and there's hydroelectric systems." This comes up. Yeah, there are, but they all need to be manufactured. They have their own environmental problems as well, and it's not as simple as people make out. But they, you know, it looks good and it sounds good. You know, when the technology is a lot better, then great, okay. But it's, and I'm not saying that there isn't. You don't go through that period where everything, you know, is developed. It's just I don't like the hype around.
No, they're all right in cities where you don't do so many miles, and also that's where air pollution's a problem.
Exactly.
But out in the countryside, air pollution really isn't a problem. But the cities are certainly up in Scotland, Edinburgh, they're not pushing electric at all. There's not one charge point I can think of in Edinburgh city centre at all for an electric car. And the pollution up here is terrible.
I've not seen one in North Wales.
Yeah.
Andrew, I think you're going to be getting electric vans, aren't you?
We're meant to be, but we'll see if they can afford them first. Well, one of my mates was saying he saw a second-hand electric car, but it needed a new battery, and that was going to be $7,000 for the new electric battery. $7,000.
You're going from a Transit to a Nissan NB200, which is like the minivan, you know, the small van.
Yeah.
Thing, and you've got to move people
could do 250 miles a day.
Yeah, you're lucky to get 40 miles in an electric van, so you know, you're going to be stuck.
Graphene's sorted, you've heard of that, it's a sort of a weird graphite based material, and that is meant to be able to hold a huge charge and be charged very, very quickly. And it's flexible. The idea is you'll be able to have it in sort of thin layers in places in the vehicle, wherever, so it packs better. It's not heavy. It's light, you know, like graphite's light, relatively. And if they get all that sorted, you'll have 400, 500, 600, 700 mile ranges, no problem. And the recharging is very, very quick. But it's getting it. You know,
is it sustainable as well? Because some of the materials going into current electric cars are quite...
You've got plenty of raw material, it's just making it is a tricky thing, you know. But it's that's definitely the future, if they can get it to...
Yeah, there needs to be a step change in it, that's for sure, because lithium is pretty nasty stuff, and that's what a lot of these batteries are made of.
Yep.
And if they ever get to a low state of charge, the battery's finished, which is why the cars just stop well before the battery's dead. Yep. I think they get down to about 10%, and it just has to stop. Well, the batteries are goner.
And that the poisons involved in any electric vehicle, any hybrid vehicle, to manufacture them to and then disposal afterwards. I told you, didn't I, that with the Prius that everyone thinks is this wonderful car, you know, and all the Hollywood actors have got because it makes them green. And it came top of the most environmentally friendly car donkeys years ago. I remember when I used to read car magazines a lot more. And then someone had the sense to do a total life cycle green league table, and it came bottom because of the disposal and the manufacturing energy and the poisons and the chemicals, everything that was required to make the car and then dispose of it at the end of its life made it absolutely terrible for the environment. So, and that's if you got the 70 something odd to the gallon they claim you get that the likes of Clarkson and normal people don't get.
Well, I had quite a funny moment in a Prius. My brother bought one and I had to take it down to him in London. And at the time, it was 2007. So it was kind of new model one. I think it was like the second generation one. So it did about 52 to the gallon. But I thought, well, I'm just going to hammer this thing down to London because I didn't have too much time. And I stopped at Wakefield Services. And there was another Prius, but it was one of the really, really early ones. And it was a dual carriageway as you came off at Wakefield to go to the services. And it was doing about 25 mile an hour along like the 60 zone. So I just kept hearing past it and thought, right, I'll cut in and go into the services. And they followed me in. And this woman who was this from something from like a kind of hippie commune. And she says, what were you doing there? You overtook me coming into the services. And I says, well, you're miles away. You're doing like 25 mile an hour. I said, I know, I do have time. I need to get on. And says, you're not exactly driving a green car in a very green way, are you?
It was back to you. Which rear-ended it going that slow on a motorway. That would have gone down well, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it was something else.
Things, isn't there? So, for a reason.
Right. But, no, Arcus, I get fed up with all their kind of nonsense PC speak when they start doing all their electric car rubbish. And I mean, some electric cars are pretty good, but I mean, it's like we laugh because we go to Company Car in Action every year and they're all trying to do it. They did one year when it was the greener Company Car in Action. And then the problem was Jaguar brought along every V8 powered car they had, at least 500 horsepower. And they pulled off. I remember when we were there waiting in the queue, and this guy came up, the head of Company Car, saying that you're going to have to tone down your cars for next year because their one went on fire on the 2 mile oval and caused a lot of hassle and stuff. But it was great fun because you could have some amazing machines that you could drive yourself. I got a shot in the F-Type. Was it the F-Type? Yeah, it is the F-Type, isn't it? They had a convertible F-Type four-wheel drive. I didn't realise it was four-wheel drive at the time, but it was the 5-liter
supercharged. Yeah, that is.
It was incredible because Jonathan would be trying to get drives in different cars. I think you managed to book a few, but you'd wait in the queue for ages. And I just thought
it was just turned up. Oh, I'll take the F-Type 5-liter V8 supercharged. Thanks. I was like, I've been in the queue for like 2 hours. Jaguar XE diesel. And he turns up and gets a freaking F-Type S or whatever it was.
What's that Blackadder quote? You lucky, lucky.
Yeah. Lucky, well, lucky, 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 lucky.
The guy's phone saying he couldn't do that car, you see. And I just happened to be there. And I said, look, I'll take that slot. And so I got it. And I made it around the Alpine route. But then the other 5-liter V8 had crashed on the oval. So I couldn't actually do the oval because it was on fire. So it was like something at the Back to the Future.
The trouble was that particular Company Car in Action, nobody went to any other stand apart from Jaguar. I mean, everything was deserted and all the other manufacturers were like, nobody's been here all day. All they had was a queue of about 1,000 reps outside trying to have a go in a Jaguar V8. I did have a go in the XKR8, the last one of those that had the same engine, the 500 brake horsepower V8 supercharged. Amazing car, absolutely incredible. I couldn't believe, and you could turn the traction control off, anything, and they didn't seem to care. I honestly couldn't understand it. How they got that past health and safety, I have no idea.
Well, then the insurance must have been something.
Yeah.
But I mean, in years gone by, that was the most amazing event, like in the mid-2000s when we were there. Because you had like Subaru, you had, oh, what else did you have? You had all sorts of cars coming, but it was all like the WRXs, and they let you go out there. And it really was like the game, because everyone would just, they would go in a group of about five or six of all these powerful cars. You had like the Vauxhall Monaros, you had all sorts of stuff. Although they were tend to be quite slow because folk would be too terrified to drive them. But they had a lot of quite good stuff at that time, like BMWs and all that kind of thing. And you'd go in a group of about five or six, and then you'd get onto this route. And it, honestly, it was terrifying because if you were in the middle of that group, you could not slow down. You had to absolutely go for it. So regardless of what the marshals were waving, you just had to keep going, you know, because, you know, you were driving to the scene of the accident. I mean, they were just flying everywhere. You would be in the three figures on that Alpine route quite easily, and going up the hills and round and about and taking off at every jump that you could, you know. And when you kind of finished the kind of stage, you were like, you know, you could relax. It was something, but it was great fun.
It was almost the end of the second day that was kind of risky because you sort of had your driving and, you know, you have this little license that you have to present when you get a car. And at the end of the second day, it's like, well, if I lose a license now, it doesn't really matter, does it? We've had a good time. But it would thin out, really. All the fleet managers were looking at the diesels, would go home, and it was just nutters like Hugh and I left, just looking for absolute maximum attack on the Alpine route in whatever the manufacturers would give us. Normally the fastest thing we could find. Yeah, it was nuts. Absolutely crazy.
How many you drove?
Sometimes you think it's as well you didn't get that last run because I think you had a quadrifoglio. Was it last time? The Giulia quadrifoglio. He was going out, and I think it was just something from the Lord above that stopped him because I think it would be a massive accident if he'd gone. What a machine!
I would be wetting myself. But a little bit
annoyed when I couldn't get out.
Alfa Romeo fan, and just a little bit in it, Hugh.
Just a little bit.
a fella, because I live in on the coast near Abergele, so there's a horrible seafront here. Not great. But okay. I was going for a walk in the summer, and some fella had parked the correct red Rosso Corsa, Alfa Romeo Giulia, full fat, clover leaf. Very nice. And I just stood there staring at it so long, the fella came up and said, are you okay? I mean, I'm a 50-year-old man and I'm looking at this thing like I'm three, you know. Chatting away about it and his wife's going, I don't like it. I want a BMW. And I just thought, you silly cow. Just start the engine, you go, oh, you know. Oh, God. Just what they should have been making for the past 30 years that they haven't.
Yeah. I think, did we drive a run in a Stelvio quadrifoglio as well? Because we had one of those in.
You had a go in one, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if I had a go in it or if it was a passenger run.
Because
it may have been a passenger run in it. I can't quite remember.
Exactly, I should hate it, but it's quite a nice looking car.
Yeah, it does look good in it. I think it was a passenger ride in it.
They all do. It's like having that Bentley Bent Bagel, whatever they call it.
Bent Bagel.
Yeah. But it's just, you know, oh, we've got to have an SUV. It's Alfa Romeo. This is the original Formula One team. Stop it. But it's actually a really nice looking car and it sounds great. So I don't know what to do with that.
The handling is almost too perfect because it's so pointy. It's actually, even in the dry, it's quite easy to get it to oversteer a bit. The traction control comes in quite late. And if it's wet, I drove the two-wheel drive one. The two-wheel drive was at the 200 horsepower petrol. And it was wet at company car this year, and I had to go in that.
280 brake horsepower, I think.
280, yeah. It was really, you know, it was so, the steering's just so exact. You know, it's like a go-kart.
They do move around a lot, those things.
I have to say, I don't know if I'd want that on a long journey because it was quite, it was kind of, you really had to drive it with all your attention the whole time. Well, you know, because the steering is just so tight, it just turns straight away and it's quite easy to get sliding before you know it. I mean, it's like nothing else. You get into a normal car and it feels like a bus because you've got so many more bits of lock to do, you know. It's like the Alfa is just like that. Basically, if you can't do more than that, you're in the wall anyway. So you're
gonna, you know, see, you're not helping me because you're not saying anything bad about it so far. It's just, you know, that still sounds very nice. The reason I've been ignorant and looking at my phone is I was looking up something. I follow a channel on YouTube called Harry's Garage. a fellow called Harry Metcalf, who started Evo magazine. He's retired from it now, and I found it by accident because, you know, it's cars. And he has a Jag. One of his cars is this Jag, and it's an XE. XE SV. It's called Project 8.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, he's. I've seen a few of the videos where he goes around Goodwood in that, giving ex-vets that have been injured and this kind of stuff a go as a passenger, because this thing does 0-60 in about 3 and a bit seconds or something. You know, it's 600 horsepower. And it sounds okay. That's the kind of a V8 you wouldn't take to a you know, Greenpeace convention, put it that way.
the Project A is excellent. Absolutely brilliant machine.
Looks amazing. It really does. I wouldn't say no.
They should make the thing, because it's a very limited production, isn't it? Or was it just a few from Jaguar special cars?
I was just too busy going, wow. He's watching him drive this thing and listening to the engine. Turning the telly up really loud, you know.
We've been going for nearly just under an hour, so I think that's probably long enough for our show tonight. But I'll do a quick exit and then we can carry on afterwards in a minute.
Get the beers in.
Well, to all our viewers and listeners, you have been watching and listening to the Car Sim and Race Driver Show. Perhaps if you'd like to email in, you can. It's info@shoehattrick.com. with your worst driving days. That would be quite fun, actually. So who's had the terrible driving day? Right, there are many million out there who certainly have. But it's been fantastic to have everybody here on the show, from Andrew Dixon to Andrew Marr to Jonathan Sutherland, and to me, who the bigot in the background. so you know when I'm coming up behind you, you better get out of the way. But, I'm driving to the scene of the accident. So drive fast and try not to crash. You can support us on by going to cardoadvisor.co.uk as well. Wherever you are in the world, if you need to rent a car, use our rental link, which we'll put in the description when the video is edited. Or you can go onto the website itself and you can save a fortune wherever you are in the world. Pretty much 53,000 locations, and Zit supports the channel too. But it's been wonderful to have you all on the show. And to our listeners and viewers, have a great week and a great Christmas. And we'll be back in the new year with plenty more car nonsense and banter and chat. And for F1 coverage like nobody else.
Yes.
There's a reason why we haven't even been platformed. See you later. Live and sunny. Bye for now.
At cardioadvisor.co.uk, we can help you save thousands of pounds on your next new car or van. And we can also source second-hand cars as well. And we can save you money on car rental, whether it be in the UK and abroad. Just click our rental link on the website. And we'll give you a free gift if you trade in your car with We Buy Any Car using our special website link. So go to the website now and see how much you can save.